Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The NASA Conspiracies, The Truth Behind the Moon Landings, Censored Photos, and The Face on Mars, by Nick Redfern, narrated by Sean Grindel. Introduction. On October 4th, 1957, the entire Western world was well and truly shocked to its collective core when the former Soviet Union blasted into orbit its now legendary Sputnik 1 satellite. And although the life of Sputnik 1 was destined to be a manifestly short one, while decaying from its orbit only 4 days into 1958, it quickly ignited and was burned to cinders in the Earth's upper atmosphere. The propaganda value of its launch alone, at the height of the tension-filled Cold War, was near incalculable, and practically impossible to successfully trump. The government of the United States of America, in particular, immediately felt both panicked and highly vulnerable, due to the fact that the Russians had overwhelmingly beaten them to the first leg of the race to outer space. As a result of this setback for the United States, its government, its military, and the collective intelligence community of the CIA, NSA, and FBI quickly recognized the dire need, scientifically, psychologically, and defensively, to catch up with what, at the time, was most certainly the biggest and largely unanticipated technological development within the communist world. Indeed, the US Congress was so overwhelmingly worried and utterly appalled by the Soviet surprise leap into space that it collectively demanded rapid, concerted, and unified moves on the part of the government as a whole to rectify the balance of power that had now been so drastically and quickly undermined. Under absolutely no circumstances at all, it was forcefully and logically argued, could the Soviet Union be allowed to gain a significant or even a modest foothold in the previously uncharted domain of outer space? And particularly so if the very same domain was ever to become significantly militarized, as many figures within the scientific community and within the Air Force and Army suspected might one day very well occur, perhaps sooner than later. President Dwight D. Eisenhower and his staff, astutely recognizing that the old familiar world around them was changing rapidly, drastically, and in ways that had been largely unanticipated until now, embarked upon the first tentative and previously uncharted steps to try and rectify the situation, and set about balancing the precarious struggle for supremacy that still existed at the time between the powers of East and West. The dire need for a totally new body to deal with an equally new realm, namely that of outer space, was clearly realized. By the early months of 1958, the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, NACA, was well on its way to determining how and under what particular circumstances an official organization of the US government, unlike any that had ever previously existed, could take complete control and carefully and capably manage the brave new world that outer space was offering humankind. In April 1958, as a direct result of the NACA's growing vision, Eisenhower proudly stood before Congress and announced the ambitious establishment and what was to be originally known as the National Aeronautical and Space Agency. This was very good news, and precisely what the members of Congress clearly wished to hear. And by the end of July 1958, the National Aeronautics and Space Act had been carefully formulated and approved at a presidential level. The new body, now to be known as the slightly reworded National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, as it is known to one and all today, was duly born, and quickly initiated plans for the United States to play a decisive and leading role in outer space. Since that now historic date, NASA has successfully placed countless satellites into Earth orbit, has blasted both men and women into space, has put a handful of brave astronauts onto the surface of our nearest neighbor, the Moon, has revamped and revolutionized off-planet travel with the Space Shuttle fleet, has sent unmanned probes to such planets as Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, and Venus, and has ensured that humankind is no longer tethered to planet Earth. But that is not all. Behind the scenes, there is a very different NASA. Some might even say it's a darker and shadowy NASA. It is, as is about to become acutely apparent, a NASA that is seemingly populated to near bursting with stories of high-level cover-ups and secrets relative to UFOs, flying saucers, alien life forms from faraway worlds, strange creatures, crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft, face-to-face encounters with the denizens of other worlds, dead aliens held in cryogenic storage, top-secret documents on lethal extraterrestrial viruses, the notorious face on Mars that many researchers of the puzzle believe was built millennia ago by a race of long-extinct Martians. Classified and censored photographs of alien spaceships.
Shocking and sensational testimony from NASA's very own astronauts on their beliefs and personal sightings of a definitively unknown and alien nature.
It is the strange, the fantastic, and the ominous world of the NASA conspiracies.
Chapter 1. Implications of the Alien Kind.
Coincidentally or not, following the Soviet Union's successful launch of Sputnik 1 in October 1957, there was a sudden and unsettling increase in the number of UFO sightings reported from within the confines of the United States of America. Whereas people of a skeptical nature might very well give much consideration to the possibility that many such reports were merely due to overexcitement, Cold War nerves, public hysteria and anxiety, and very understandable concern over the surprise Russian launch, other UFO-connected events could not be dismissed with such apparent ease and logic. A formerly secret FBI report of November 12, 1957, which has now been made available via the provisions of the Freedom of Information Act, makes that fact abundantly clear. Within the past 2 weeks, reports have increased tremendously, and some of the more serious have been described as follows. An object had landed in Nebraska with 6 people aboard. The persons had talked to a Nebraska farmer and then sped off into space. A fiery object was seen flashing across the southern skies from Albany, Georgia, to Miami, Florida. A Coast Guard cutter had sighted a huge object flying over the Gulf of Mexico. And persons in the southwestern states, while driving their cars, have allegedly seen UFOs that caused the engines of their automobiles to stop. The FBI's special agents continued to diligently collate the strange and unearthly facts pertaining to what seemed to many of its personnel to be a near-cosmic invasion, and studiously briefed FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover on the nature of the expanding situation, as well as on the then-current response of the U.S. military to the vexing problem presented by the growing UFO presence. The Air Force is following these sightings closely, and all reports are submitted to the Air Technical and Intelligence Center at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio, where they are evaluated and analyzed. In the event any of the future reports appear to be authentic, the Air Force will immediately notify the Bureau, keeping in mind our particular interest in matters concerning espionage and sabotage. It is thought-provoking indeed to note that this undeniably dramatic upswing in UFO sightings, and even close encounters with alien entities, occurred in the immediate aftermath of the former Soviet Union's launch of its Sputnik 1 satellite. Is it possible, perhaps, that the strange denizens of another world, or worlds, were secretly keeping a close watch on humankind's first attempts to break free of its terrestrial moorings? And if so, was it those initial hesitant steps outside of our own atmosphere that prompted such a flurry of concerned activity on the part of extraterrestrial visitors from faraway planets?
It may be important and relevant to note that by 1957, and throughout the course of little more than a decade, the human race had successfully developed atomic energy, had flattened 2 Japanese cities with atomic bombs, was working on advanced missile and rocket technology, and had finally left the moorings of the planet.
In other words, it might very well be at this particular time in our history, more than any other, when alien visitors from afar might begin to take a serious interest in us and express deep concerns about us and our actions. Perhaps, also, one might be inclined to speculate advanced alien civilizations of the type that were possibly secretly watching us in the late 1950s have undertaken such intense scrutiny and surveillance on countless occasions throughout the universe, particularly so when youthful, burgeoning civilizations take that giant and world-changing leap from being tied to their own planet, and when propeller-driven aircraft dropping bombs on the enemy are rapidly replaced by intercontinental missiles that have the ability to obliterate whole cities, countries, and cultures. These controversial questions, issues, and speculations are made all the more provocative by the fact that only a couple of years later, at the dawning of the 1960s, when NASA's plans for outer space activity reached highly ambitious and groundbreaking levels, Donald N. Michael, who was then employed by the prestigious Brookings Institution, prepared a lengthy document on behalf of NASA's committee on long-range studies titled Proposed Studies on the Implications of Peaceful Space Activities for Human Affairs, which was submitted to the House of Representatives in the 87th United States Congress on April 18, 1961. The creation, submission, and nature of the document in question proved to be a pivotal moment in the long and winding history of NASA and its relationship to all things of an unearthly and alien origin. The report was a truly significant one. In excess of 200 people, from all manner of disciplines, that might have had a possible bearing upon the human race's future in the domain of outer space, were carefully consulted and interviewed at some depth. In other words, this was a highly significant, unique project that arguably offered NASA's personnel a wealth of material in the form of expert advice, guidance, hypotheses, and recommendation on some of the major space-related issues of the day. The Brookings document makes for very notable reading for one specific reason. It compiles insights on the nature of extraterrestrial life and potentially dire implications for the entire human race if highly advanced alien creatures were one day discovered, or, on the other hand, if they were to discover us. Even in its very earliest formative years, NASA was deeply preoccupied with, and was focusing a great deal of its keen attention upon, the theoretical notion of the human race making at least some form of contact with intelligent, extraterrestrial civilizations from far outside of our own solar system. The fact that the Brookings Report, in no small part, dealt with the many and varied potentially thorny issues that might very well arise from close encounters of a definitively alien kind, must surely beg the significant question. Was NASA concerned due to what had occurred directly after the Soviets' launch of Sputnik 1 in 1957, that its own space missions might quickly provoke a wave of striking UFO encounters in and around the United States? Put another way, did that concern have any bearing, large or small, upon NASA's decision to commission the Brookings Report in the first place? With those questions in mind, let us take a careful look at the relevant section of the now historic document itself. Proposed Studies on the Implications of Peaceful Space Activities for Human Affairs. It was one particular section of the report titled The Implications of a Discovery of Extraterrestrial Life that generated so much commentary and interest at the time of its publication, even within the mainstream media that generally scoffed and sneered at any and all talk of friendly or hostile aliens visiting us from faraway worlds. But this was no amateurish, haphazard report prepared by wide-eyed science fiction buffs or fanatical UFO devotees. No, the themes, the ideas, and even the warnings, relative to the many and varied potential outcomes that direct or even indirect interaction with aliens might provoke, were the results of some of the finest scientific minds within the United States of America, applying their expertise to such matters. Notably, and to the surprise of some within the mainstream American media, very few of those scientific minds consulted by Brookings were prepared to rule out the possibility that, one day, humankind might possibly find itself confronted by superior beings from a world perhaps very much like our own, or, conversely, one that was radically different from the planet we inhabit. Admittedly, the Brookings document clearly shows that there was major doubt and skepticism on the part of the scientific community of the day that literal face-to-face contact with ET would ever actually occur. Rather, it was near unanimously considered and concluded that radio would be the most likely medium by which we might one day finally obtain confirmation that the human race is not all alone in the universe after all. Interestingly, it was also hypothesized within the pages of the Brookings document that perhaps ancient objects, devices, or structures left behind on the surface of the moon, or even on the surface of some of the nearby planets in our solar system, millennia ago by non-human intelligences, might one day provide NASA with clues, and maybe even hard evidence, suggesting strongly that life out there had, at some point in our long and turbulent history, been far closer to home than we might previously have considered possible. Top Secret. If the existence of alien life forms was one day fully confirmed beyond any shadow of doubt, and then the determination was made that such a finding should be revealed to the general public and the media en masse, what would be the possible outcome? What would be the implication of such a revelation? Would worldwide chaos and fear quickly reign supreme? Might global social order completely and irreversibly teeter and wobble before finally collapsing and spectacularly imploding? Would there be amazement and bewilderment about our cosmic brothers and sisters and their intent, benign or otherwise, toward us? Could we find ourselves becoming overly reliant upon the presumed technological advances and scientific marvels that a race of beings centuries ahead of us might have to offer to the lowly human race? In other words, on this latter point, might our culture actually find itself swallowed whole by that of the near-omnipotent alien intelligences in our midst, to the point at which our present-day civilization and our familiar way of life one day becomes nothing more than the stuff of distorted memory, folklore, myth, and near-forgotten legend? These questions were vitally important and relevant ones to Brookings and to NASA. Whatever the possible outcome, the Brookings Institution was confident that the answers to these and many more questions would be moulded to a significant degree by the social, sociological, cultural, and religious beliefs of the general public all across the world, as well as by the similar beliefs, acceptances, and ideologies espoused by our elected leaders and religious authorities. The plus side of all this speculation was the welcome scenario of the people of Earth finally uniting under one banner when faced with outright alien contact. In other words, following a revelation that aliens are among us and are here to stay, there might very well be a planet-wide push for us to see one and all as human beings, as citizens of a unified and a peaceful Earth, rather than, as we are now, I would strongly argue, a motley band of nations seemingly forever focusing upon conflict, one-upmanship, and national rivalry. But for all of that grand hypothesizing about what might happen should an announcement of alien contact be unleashed upon the world at large one day, some consideration was given within the pages of the Brookings document to the controversial scenario not of when the general public should be told that contact with alien intelligences had been successfully confirmed, but if that same general public should be told, ever. Of course, today, the inflammatory theory that elements of the US government, the military, the intelligence community, and even NASA have indeed chosen to keep the public in the dark about their knowledge of alien visitations and UFOs is absolutely widespread. In view of this, perhaps we might argue convincingly that the Brookings report was not based solely upon mere speculation. Unsurprisingly, the conclusions of the report made very big waves indeed within the American media of the day. As a perfect example of this, on December 15, 1960, none other than the New York Times devoted significant page space to the now historic and controversial report. The newspaper highlighted in part that NASA had been warned to prepare and ready itself for the discovery of advanced life forms in outer space. The Times also carefully noted one of the most important and critical of all the issues raised, namely the fact that the Brookings Institution report revealed that we, as a civilization, might suffer both adversely and significantly if confronted by a race of beings possessed of vastly superior intellect and highly advanced technologies. Also very keen to comment upon the report from Brookings was one of the earliest and certainly one of the most influential and respected civilian UFO research groups within the United States, the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, NICAP, NICAP, which had been established in 1956 by a physicist and scientific visionary named Thomas Townsend Brown. In the December 1960, January 1961 issue of its in-house journal, the UFO Investigator, under the justifiable heading of Space Life Report Could Be Shock, NICAP echoed the words of the New York Times that the discovery of intelligent space beings in our midst could potentially have a severe and not necessarily positive effect on the entire global public mindset. The NASA warning of a possible shock to the public from the revelation of more advanced civilizations supports NICAP's previous arguments against AF, Air Force, secrecy about UFOs. All available information about UFOs should be given to the public now, so that we will be prepared for any eventuality. It may very well be the case that NASA too had a deep desire and also a pressing need to be prepared for any and all eventualities, good, dire, foreseen or otherwise. The Brookings report was not itself a classified top-secret document. However, its stern warnings and observations to NASA about A. the possible political and or social repercussions that, theoretically, could be born out of an announcement that aliens exist. B. the potential disintegration of society that might follow in the wake of just such a life-changing revelation. And C. the controversial issue of whether or not the news of a discovery of alien life should be withheld from the public, may very well have prompted the most senior and elite sources within NASA to secretly formulate plans to firmly bury, just about as far away as was humanly possible from inquisitive eyes and minds, any and all evidence of both extraterrestrial life forms and UFOs. Certainly, it is an absolute undeniable fact that as the 1960s progressed, so did the many and varied claims and allegations linking NASA to high-level UFO-dominated conspiracies and cover-ups. That the space agency was steadfastly determined to demystify any and all assertions that it was deliberately hiding significant amounts of classified UFO data from the public, or similarly, that it was sitting on sensational facts pertaining to the discovery of advanced alien life forms, might very well be perceived as hard evidence that NASA had chosen to take very careful heed of the Brookings report and its potentially world-changing opinions and paradigm-collapsing scenarios. And just before moving on to pastures new, it is worth noting the words of the late researcher, Mac Tonnies, who made a valuable contribution to the debate on the Brookings document and its contents. If our own history is any example, technologically robust civilizations inevitably subsume less sophisticated cultures, not merely by violently dismantling them, but by introducing a virulent strain of apathy. The infamous Brookings report to NASA, recommending that the discovery of extraterrestrial artifacts be covered up for fear of paralyzing research and development enterprises, stands as perhaps the most explicit elucidation of this idea. We appear to be interacting with an exceptionally patient intelligence, which, despite its advantages over terrestrial science, seems limited by a steadfast refusal to make itself widely known. Whether this indicates a guiding morality or pragmatic necessity remains to be seen. Contrary to mainstream expectations, our visitors have opted for a much more gradual form of contact, evidenced both by the often theatrical nature of the apparent vehicles in our skies, and by the behaviour of the presumed occupants. Tonnies was not done. I propose that this intelligence has played a significant role in occasionally hastening our species' development, as well as keeping us in a periodic standby state, rendering us less likely to destroy ourselves. In a way, the human legacy has been scripted to conform to an alien template, about which we know little or nothing. But the available historical, mythological, and experiential evidence tends to support a largely benevolent raison d'etre. Perhaps we're being groomed in preparation for our own singularity, after which the others could have no choice but to deal with us as equals. Chapter 2. From Mercury to Gemini. It cannot be denied that the overwhelming majority of NASA astronauts who have ventured into space have not spoken positively on or imparted extraordinary data about UFOs, flying saucers, the theories and allegations that extraterrestrials may have clandestinely visited the Earth in our recent past, or that NASA possesses top-secret knowledge of such astounding matters. However, several most assuredly have made positive comments about UFOs and aliens, and given the expert and legendary status of those making the claims, their comments make for highly significant and awe-inspiring reading. We start with an absolute NASA hero, Gordon Cooper, who is one of the so-called Mercury 7 astronauts. In NASA's own words on Mercury, implementation was initiated to establish a national manned space flight project, later named Project Mercury, on October 7, 1958. The life of Project Mercury was about 4 2/3 years, from the time of its official go-ahead to the completion of the 34-hour orbital mission of astronaut Gordon Cooper. Gordon Cooper claimed profound UFO encounters of his own, expressed a solid acceptance that aliens from outside of our solar system were among us, and even delivered noteworthy statements on the UFO controversy to prime and influential movers within the prestigious United Nations. Cooper first became immersed in the mysterious world of the unidentified flying object in 1951, when he had a series of intriguing sightings of flying saucer-style craft that spanned a period of several days, and while he was serving with the US Air Force in what was then West Germany. It happened, said Cooper, as he and several other pilots were flying F-86 jets on a patrol over West Germany, and their attention was quickly drawn to what seemed to be a huge high-flying convoy of circular-shaped aircraft. The total absence of wings, tails, propellers, or even jet engines, as well as their fantastic speeds and incredible maneuverability, allowed Cooper and his comrades to come to one conclusion, and one conclusion only. The unknown craft that had deemed them worthy of a personal viewing were nothing less than honest-to-goodness flying saucers from some other planet. Astonishingly, for at least the next 72 hours, hundreds more such craft peppered the skies over West Germany, and in the process summarily outperformed the finest pilots and aircraft of the US Air Force. Cooper quickly became convinced that the flying saucers were not the handiwork of the Russians, or the British, or even his own government and military. Their point of origin had to be much further away. Outer space, he could only conclude. Noting astutely that the presence of alien spacecraft in our direct midst might very well have had some bearing on national security and defense-related issues, Cooper and his fellow pilots concluded that the wisest course of action was to quickly inform their immediate superiors of the incredible nature of their close encounters, of the many craft that they had all independently seen, and of the astonishing technology that those presumably piloted the UFOs clearly possessed, and were not at all afraid of demonstrating in the skies of Europe. Those superiors were far from impressed by the accounts of Cooper and his friends, however, and outrageously waved each and every report aside, summarily and arrogantly dismissing them all as nothing more than examples of mistaken identity. What all of the trained expert pilots had really seen, Cooper was boldly assured by senior Air Force personnel, were nothing more than high-flying seed pods. Yes, seed pods. I wonder if highly skilled, long-term expert flyers of the US Air Force were wholly unable to differentiate between something as innocuous and down-to-earth as a seed pod and something as fantastic, as futuristic, and as undoubtedly otherworldly as a flying saucer. Then surely those same aircrews should have been immediately grounded and subjected to a dizzying battery of psychological, physiological, and mental tests and evaluations. They were not, however. Rather, the aircrews were simply ordered to completely forget about what they had seen, or rather, what they thought they had seen, and to continue with their regular patrols in the skies of West Germany, and to just concentrate on keeping a careful lookout for far more down-to-earth things of a pressing nature, such as the military activities of the Russians. Someone within the senior ranks of the Air Force, it seems particularly safe to conclude, did not wish to draw any attention at all to an unearthly phenomenon that, as much as they preferred not to deal with it, seemingly had no intention of going away any time in the near future.
It was in 1957, however, that matters really heated up big time on the UFO front, for the man who was destined, only a few years later, to become a leading player in NASA's Mercury space program. At the time in question, Cooper was just out of his 20s, had risen to the rank of captain, and had received a new assignment to the fighter section of the Experimental Flight Test Engineering Division at California's Edwards Air Force Base.
On one morning in the first week of May 1957, two colleagues and friends of Cooper, James Bittick and Jack Gettys, were situated out on a dry lake bed at Edwards AFB. The purpose of their presence at the lake bed was to take high-quality photographs of military aircraft as they came in to land at the base. In other words, it was just another surprise-free routine day in the life of these two Air Force operatives. Or at least that's the way the day began. It did not stay surprise-free for very long, however. In the course of the morning's events, Bittick and Gettys were both amazed and shocked to be confronted by nothing less than a Day of the Earth Stood Still-style flying saucer that zoomed into view, hovered in the morning air for a while in a fashion very much like that of a helicopter, then carefully and briefly landed on the hot desert floor, only approximately 150 feet from where the shell-shocked pair could only stare in complete awe, before returning to the skies and vanishing in complete and eerie silence. Fortunately, however, as Bittick and Geddes were skilled photographers and cameramen, the pair had the presence of mind to secure both pictures.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?